Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. Through this platform, we highlight the unique stories of people making a difference as marketers, entrepreneurs, and social impact advocates, or people who are all of the above. On this week's show, Jeff chats with Anshay Bhatia, the CEO and founder of Verbal Plus Visual.
Verbal Plus Visual is an e-commerce agency that works with mission-driven retailers to design, build, and grow their e-commerce presence. The digital experiences they build allow brands that are equal parts people, product, and planet to spread their mission and showcase their product lines. Anshay also happens to be an old friend of mine.
There's nothing like good friends chatting about entrepreneurship and climate change.
So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Anshay Bhatia. Hi, Anshay. Thank you for being with us on Long Story Short.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jeff.
So we want to start with where you are today. Can you tell us what your world looks like at Verbal Plus Visual?
Absolutely. So first off, I'm the CEO and founder here at Verbal Plus Visual. We're a digital agency, and we partner with thoughtful retailers to design, build, and grow their e-commerce presence. Basically, we set up retailers with a digital infrastructure for scale. So we're a 30-person company now. Today, we have designers, developers, strategists, project managers, analytics specialists, all these folks working together with our clients. And what I do personally is I oversee the entire organization, make sure that we are growing in a way that is true to our values and true to our brand, and ensure that our team has the resources and the abilities to do the work that they can at the best of their abilities. So that's really my day today. There is no one specific day to get to your mm-hmm. question. Every day is very different. As you can imagine, as a founder, there's a lot of tugs at different strings at different times. And so my goal is to make sure that the entire organization, if you think of it as an engine, is constantly running efficiently, running effectively, and that the car is moving along as we desire.
Yeah, no 2 days the same. I can certainly that certainly resonates with me. And one of my favorite things personally about having entrepreneurs on the show is hearing the story of how they got started on that journey. And so I'm curious, at what point in your career did you know that the entrepreneurial path was right for you?
So there were two times in my life where I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. One was when I was about 13 years old. And I had my first website. This was back, I'll date myself exactly. This was back when, I think it was 1995 when AOL was a thing or was the thing. And I built out my first website and really enjoyed that process. And my parents had different businesses and I started building their business sites for them. I was doing the design work and the development work and I really enjoyed that process. And I knew that I wanted to have control over my career, you know, one day when I graduated from college and moved on. And then the second day that I realized that I wanted to be an entrepreneur was the second day of my first job. So I was 22 years old, just started my first job out of school, started on a Thursday. And by, I would say, mid-afternoon on Friday, I said, this isn't for me. And I want to learn what I can here, but I want to go off on my own and build my own adventure, so to speak. So ended up working there for a few years, really getting the lay of the land, learning as much as I could. They were a great agency, about 25 people, if I remember correctly, in northern New Jersey, just outside of New York City. Mm-hmm. Between ages 13 and 22, I knew that I wanted to create this agency. And that second day of work really solidified that I wanted to go and build something. And I wanted to do it in New York City as well. That was also a big dream of mine growing up around New York City. It's the city and it's the city in the world. So what better place to make your name there?
I love that. And so now, you know, now that you're on the other side of this and you've been leading Verbal Plus Visual for coming up on 13 years now, you know, I'm curious, what has that journey and growth looked like, you know, from the inside?
Yeah, from the inside, it's been every kind of emotion you can imagine along the way has been felt. Mm-hmm. When I started, I was essentially a freelancer. I was doing design and development work myself. I was building out sites. I also had a lot of interest in audio and video and marketing. So back in 2008, 2009, when I was starting off, I was really doing all the work myself. I was winning the business, doing the work, executing, and I wasn't really building a business per se. I was really building my freelance career.
Right.
And that had this stage where that was going really well. And then I decided to hire folks on the team, and I started by hiring interns and really learning the ropes of management and starting to build a small team. So from about 2011 to 2015, we had about 3 to 5 people on our team at any given time. Mm-hmm. And we supplemented our work, our internal work or in-house work, with freelancers and contractors. And so we built this contractor model that worked pretty well for that time period. And, you know, that was a big stage of growth, but we were still doing a lot of different types of projects from 2011 to 2015. We were taking on basically any type of project we could get for any type of client we could win, we were taking it on. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges that I faced in that first half, and I was pretty young at the time, you know, I was in my mid to late 20s. One of the biggest challenges I faced was, how do I gain traction and how do I do that while I'm working on something that I'm passionate about? Right. And so it was a constant question while we were trying to build the business. And right around 2014, 2015, we settled into e-commerce for good. And the reason we settled in this area is because I personally loved the nonprofit work that we were doing from 2010 to 2015. Mm-hmm. And I really loved the idea of leveraging data to have an effective solution, in addition to utilizing beautiful brand and content to create a beautiful solution. So I knew that retail was growing as well. I knew that Shopify, which is our technology platform, was growing. And right around 2015, all of these different forces and different life experiences and different business experiences really converged into the merge point where we decided and we planted our flag and said, we're going to concentrate on e-commerce for benefit. Retail is a huge polluter. So we wanted to start thinking about, how do we flip the script on consumerism, turn it more towards fewer, better things, and allow people to purchase more easily, but purchase fewer items, so that they were getting a lot of value out of those items, versus what I'm sure you've heard before, the term retail therapy.
Yeah.
Getting out of the mindset of retail therapy and really buying to make yourself feel great and not needing to buy 10 other things to complement that. So from 2015 to 2020, we've really grown in that sphere. We've grown from 5 people to 30. And, you know, our goal right now is I should go back for a second. During that time, from growing from 5 to 30, it's been a start and optimize situation. So what we've been doing is saying, all right, you know, if we want to grow a consulting business, there are a few different levels that you're optimized for your profitability. Mm-hmm. And there are a few different levels where you need to grow relatively quickly and invest in infrastructure. And so what we've done is go through an alternating process, almost a year and a year at a time, of growth and then optimization of the business. And we're in a growth phase in 2021. And next year, we already have a plan to make sure that we focus on what we have and optimize the client roster that we have, making sure that we have the right processes in place, continuing to grow the team member, the team size, but do so really carefully and really thoughtfully, versus aggressive growth, which we had this year. So, you know, there are these years that you have to do that to make sure that the system doesn't break, essentially. Right. And so it's an exciting time for us to reach that point where we're at 32. We have all the infrastructure that we want in place. That you would think of at any large company, an HR team, an IT team, you know, all of the different roles and responsibilities that come with that. But we're able to take some time and really optimize our company.
And I love the way you talk about that. I mean, I'm sort of, as you're talking about, I'm kind of visualizing like a heartbeat, right? And it's like where it's kind of like grows and then it kind of comes back, you know, like, but I love the idea that, again, that it's also in those optimization phases, it's a matter of sort of building the right infrastructure for what's next. And so a matter of supporting not just the team that's in place today, but the team that will be in place as you hit the next growth cycle. And again, I think that's something that's a little uniquely different in sort of a product-driven company versus a services company, right? At an agency, you can only scale as much as the, in terms of client work, as much as the people you have. Whereas, you know, a lot of times we see this more often on the product and especially in the software side, where companies just, you know, sort of they see whatever window of opportunity it is. And it's kind of like, we just need to grow and expand as quickly as we can to fill the space available. But it's just, it's really refreshing. And it's great to hear from your perspective, sort of the care and intention that gets put into that. And again, the infrastructure around supporting the team that will be there, not just what's there today.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that, Jeff. We do put a lot of time and attention on our team members. You know, at the size we are currently, there are very few companies that have a head of people and culture. Mm-hmm. And we have a head of people and culture because we really care about the team that we have in place. We want to make sure they're successful, that they're happy, that they have the resources that they need to do their best work, and that we have the processes in place to execute on that work at a high level. And so those are all things that we're spending a lot of time on. I would venture to say way more than the average 25 to 30 person company. And that's important to us. We are shifting to a 4.5-day work week starting in January.
Wow.
So in just a few months from now. And mm-hmm. that's, again, something that's very important to us because we know that, and I know from personal experience, we all know from personal experience, when you work 4.5 days in a week and you have 2.5 days, that half day makes a huge difference in your productivity next week.
Oh, yeah.
And your general happiness. So we've adjusted our model such that we can handle that. And since we can handle that, now we're in a much better position going forward to really prioritize our team members' health and wellness. And we're not perfect at it. There are a lot of things that we need to improve on, but we can prioritize it and have goal states in mind that we can work to achieve. And that we have somebody who is putting in the time and energy full time to care for our team members. And that is a world that we're going to. It is important to be in that world. And it's important for everybody, myself included, to really embody that spirit of keeping our mental health in check, keeping mm-hmm. our physical health in check, getting sleep, drinking water, you know, being outside of a screen and not being on a screen for 24 hours a day, which
yeah.
for a year and a half, we've all been in front of screens mm-hmm. basically all day, every day. And obviously not everybody, but a lot of people have been in front of screens all day, every day. And that's been very, for me personally, it's been, you know, it's fried me in many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really concentrating on my own time off and my own free time. And I think we have to do that as leaders of businesses. We have to do that for our team members. We have to really put emphasis and care on our team members.
I love that. And so I want to follow that because again, I mean, you know, the fact that you have such a culture driven organization, that's really where I want to go next, where it's ultimately, and I don't want to say I'm burying the lead a little bit, but I want to shift gears and talk about something that impacts every single person listening right now, which is, so I would just love if you could share the mission that Verbal Plus Visual, what the mission is and the goal that you've set.
Absolutely. So our mission is to flip consumerism towards fewer, better things, thus resulting in better environmental outcomes and better mental health outcomes as well as a side result. I talked about retail therapy earlier. If you're buying one thing that you love and you're happy with it, you're not going to need to buy the other 10 things. And that's hugely beneficial for all parties involved. It may not feel as beneficial for the retailer. However, if the retailer is smart, they'll realize that that is actually a better business move to charge more for a higher quality product and potentially give the, and I'm sure you've seen split pay and things like that, mm-hmm. Give the customer the ability to pay over time.
Right.
So those, or come up with other creative solutions along the way to allow them to buy that item. Because traditionally it's been, oh, that item is $1,000, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. But if you can come up with new ways for that person to pay, which are happening now, that's going to be hugely beneficial. our goal as a company, the tangible numerical goal that we are looking at over the next decade, we've just put this in place as of summer 2021, is to reduce or prevent 43 million tons of carbon from going in the atmosphere. That number comes from the number of total emissions in the world from 2019, the last year before COVID. And so it's 0.1% of total global emissions in 2019. Now, one might say, you're 30 people. Are you crazy? You're never going to be able to hit that. And to that, I say, we absolutely can hit that as long as we scale intelligently over time. More importantly, what we want to do is inspire others to pay more attention to sustainability. Our goal is not to necessarily be the first or be the best. Our goal around sustainability, our goal is for everybody to act around climate change and to solve climate change. And so if we can be a small little sliver of inspiration, I'm happy with that outcome. And that's important to me. And then for us as a team, you know, we are putting into place a lot of best practices with our clients around sustainability. We are putting in a measurement system starting next year for our clients. And we partner with a service called Climate Neutral, who does different measurement or has different measurement methods for climate impact. And we are actually offsetting all of our carbon footprint as an agency as well every year. So whatever we emit as an agency, we measure that and we offset that with green energy initiatives. So we pay to have our carbon offset, essentially.
So I just want to say, I mean, that's such an impressive stance that you're taking. I mean, because just for starters, I mean, you run a company that does not manufacture physical products, right? And that's typically the realm which I think so many people see this as. And not to say that as a society we created sort of it's a your problem thing if you're the manufacturers. But to me, I think it's such a powerful and great message and example, frankly, that every individual and company can really do their part to contribute towards the common goal, sort of wherever you are in the spectrum.
Exactly. It is not something that is unattainable. If everybody chips in just a little bit in whatever sphere you are working on, or even in your personal life, you can do it. And that may mean in certain cases, putting pressure on governments and private companies. But if the top 100 private companies were pressured to change their practices around negative environmental impacts, we would solve climate change almost immediately.
Yep.
So that is the number one cause for us. And what we want to do is ratchet up the ladder in terms of the retailers that we work with, in terms of their size. Quality of clients is great no matter their size for us. We feel very lucky with our client base. But as we grow as a company, we want to work with bigger and bigger retailers. And retail being the number, I always get confused. It's, you know, it fluctuates between number two and number three pollutants in the world. Fuels being number one and transport being number one. So if transport is number one and retail is number two or number three, then, you know, retail also affects transport because we're talking about e-commerce. So we're trying to affect two different areas of climate change simultaneously. If we can reduce the amount of shipments that go out significantly through our work over the next decade, again, this is a large goal and a long-term goal, but if we can do that and we can inspire others to do that, that is going to have a huge positive impact on our environment. So that's where we want to get to. We're laying the bricks to do that right now, and we're excited to see how this grows and scales effectively and measure that impact over the coming decade.
Yeah, I love that. And again, the idea, though, that you sit somewhere sort of in the continuum of those retail companies. And so, again, but the idea that any of these major sort of systemic social issues are not going to be solved if there's only a few pressure points, right? To your point around, like, if, you know, enough pressure was being put on those top 100 companies, that could happen almost overnight. But that's today, that's not happening, at least in a strong enough way. And so to me, the way any of those problems will best be addressed is really this way, where the pressure is coming from all sides, right? So again, holding your clients responsible, creating these systems, creating measurement systems around it. Because again, you know, like a lot of people, and frankly, even the first time I heard this is kind of like, you know, wow, that's really ambitious for, you know, for a web development agency to say that they can do that on their own. But the fact, again, where it's not just yourself, but sort of, you know, the influence you can have within that as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just, it's the issue of our time. If we don't solve it, we will be in a terrible landscape environmentally and, you know, potentially going extinct in 100 years. And that's a very real threat that many of our leaders have not taken seriously enough. Mm-hmm. And, that's a whole other political issue, but what we're doing on our side is, trying to make sure we, again, influence the areas that we can. We love creating digital experiences, and we love the idea of using those digital experiences for good. So we're constantly questioning, is this for good? I get some just incredible questions from my team about why are we taking on so-and-so client? Mm-hmm. Why would we work with this client? And, you know, I've had to have some very challenging conversations, but they're good. They're honest. They're real, and we can talk about what it means to what sustainability means, because there are a lot of good things that you can do, and there are always some negative aspects of taking on any particular client as it relates to sustainability. Nobody's perfect, and we are all trying, at least our clients and our team members are all trying to get to that more perfect union, so to speak, between agency and retailer of we're delivering high quality results for the client, and we're doing so with sustainability and climate change in mind.
I love that. And so as you think back sort of on the span of your career, I'm curious, what are some of the key lessons you would say you've learned, and what would be some advice that you would give to entrepreneurs that are probably in the earlier part of their journeys?
I would say, make sure you know what you want to focus on early. It took me several years to know exactly what I wanted to focus on. And if I had to do it again, so I worked at a company for 2 years, I freelanced for 2 years, and then I started this company. Mm-hmm. If I had to do it again, I would probably have worked at a small company, small digital agency, a medium-sized company, and a large company. And potentially I would have gone to a couple other jobs and understood how those, and I'm, when I say a couple other jobs, I'm speaking in other industries. Maybe I would have gone to the retail side and then gone back to the agency side, but really gaining a deeper understanding from the outset, as well as potentially going and getting my MBA. You know, I know that those can be seen as not as useful in many ways. I think if I was going to a top school, you know, I would have been on board with that. It was something I had wanted to do when I was young, and I ended up not doing that. So I think, you know, I'm approaching 40 years old now. If I had done all that by age 30, which is plenty realistic, and then started the company, I think I would be a little bit further, quote unquote, further ahead of where I am today, because I would have gotten more perspective and I would have had more focus in a safer environment before taking the leap. I think I spent a lot of time early in my career keeping the lights on, and not enough time focusing on vision and growth of the organization. And growth doesn't mean scale necessarily at all points of time. Growth can be growth of my own personal development, growth of the development of my team members, growth in terms of processes, growth in terms of quality of clients. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to think about growth. It's not just scale. So, you know, I think it would have, if I had to compare that life path to where we are today, I think potentially we would have been ahead, but maybe not, you know, who's to say? We can't, we're not in the movie Sliding Doors. We can't see both paths unfold before us. But, you know, ultimately I would say to a new entrepreneur, make sure that you're ready, make sure that you time it well, and make sure you have a clear focus on what it is you want to accomplish. And if you have those three things, then go for it. And at some point you are going to have to take the risk. I have seen the opposite effect happen, where people get very comfortable working at a job, and they decide not to go the entrepreneurial route, even though they have all the skills, all the passion, all the drive to do it. And so be bold. This is a time to be bold. The world is changing very rapidly. There are a lot of major challenges that need to be solved. You know, there's a list of something like the top 26 issues that need to be solved in the world. They all need attention. You know, we're working on one, and I'm proud that we are, but there's so many others that need attention. And so if you're passionate about something that's going to positively impact the planet and the people on this planet and the animals on this planet, do it, and do it as quickly as you can, because, you know, life is short, but you also want to make sure that you have you maximize your impact and effectiveness when you do start off on your own.
That's such a great message. And again, you're right. Like, it, as you're talking, and I can hear that and feel that in my own journey as well, as sort of that balancing act of, you want to take the time and the preparation, but then you kind of want to learn from experience. And it, you know, so again, I mean, it's one of those things where, to your point, would you be farther ahead? Would you not be, you know, who knows? Right. But I think that's great to hear. Again, just understanding, you know, how much of that comes, A, you know, that you found that out through experience, but how much of that could have been done before. And so I think, you know, part of the other message is, it doesn't, you know, when you get the urge on your second day of work, which I love, you don't necessarily need, if you're somebody in that position, you don't necessarily need to jump ship now, right? Like, you can think about, what are the skills, what are the things I can learn and acquire while I'm in the situation? It doesn't have to be your forever. You can certainly take it from a sort of a goal-oriented perspective, and what are you trying to learn? And I love your perspective too of saying, you know, get experience on the client side in the industry that you want to be working in. You know, so I think a lot of people can say they think they understand from the outside, but just there's nothing that replaces that internal experience.
Yeah. I think there, you know, whatever path you take, try to get as much perspective as you can is really the gist. It depends on, we're talking about my industry of digital agency and digital product, but in whatever industry you're in, there are going to be a lot of different perspectives, and you want to gain those perspectives and gain that experience as much as you can, as quickly as you can, because you're not just going to quit your job, start a business, and everything's going to go great. It's not. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be really challenging. The larger the change you want to make, the harder and more challenging it is exponentially. So, you know, if you want to do something that is been done 100,000 times before, and you'll be able to do that. As long as you work hard and, you know, set yourself up intelligently, you'll be able to do that. But if you want to truly make change in the world, then you've got to have a tremendous amount of passion for the work that you're doing and a tremendous amount of grit to not give up, because it's very easy to give up. I could have given up, you know, 100 times over, but I didn't. I persisted, and, you know, we're in a good position now. We're not where I want to be. We haven't achieved the ultimate goal, which is that 43 million tons of carbon being prevented from going in the atmosphere. And, you know, I would say you have to be ready for, you know, an intense experience with building a business. It is intense, and it's incredibly rewarding, at so many different stages in so many ways. Yeah. I'm incredibly, just one final point on this note is that I'm so proud of our team. Our team works extremely hard. They put in the work. They want to get better every day. And they want to produce something that they're proud of, and they question if things are not to our values. And I think, you know, somebody on the team the other day said, you know, I'm new to the team, but I want to say one thing I've noticed is that everybody here is a smart and kind person. And I've never worked at a place where every single person at an organization is like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this to toot our own horn. I'm merely saying, like, it is probably the thing I'm most proud of, that we have people who are driven, but they are kind and they want to do good work. And so I think that's, as you're building an organization, you want to be around people that you feel have the values that you have. And that's going to allow all of you to move together in the same way.
Well said. So one thing we like to ask all of our guests is how they define success for themselves. And so this can be personally, professionally, it can be in any sense of the word. What does success mean to you?
Yeah, I think success means balance and impact. Let's say that. So on the balance side, really making sure our team members are taken care of. That their mental health and physical health and, you know, overall capacity to do high quality work is taken care of. And that our clients on the other side also are getting the results that they so desire, that we're making them think about how to run their business better. And that from an impact perspective, we are achieving that numerical value that we're placing upon our organization. And it's a long-term goal. So we're working at that mm-hmm. and we're setting up the systems to do that. But I think when I look back, when I'm, you know, in my 50s and 60s and starting to wind down my career, I want to be able to look back and say, we achieved that level of impact. That to me is success. You know, at some point, most agencies, they end up getting acquired. And that's a nice thing to think about in the future. Mm-hmm. But a lot of companies get acquired that don't, in my mind, don't accomplish much. They grow and scale their business. They build a product that a lot of people want, but they're not impacting the world in any meaningful way. And that's not a knock on them at all. What I mean to say is, for me, success is defined as impact. And if we can have a true impact on the world, and you know, a lot of people or everybody takes that mindset in whatever area they're working in, we can have a better planet all around. And I think that is success, is that we have a better, more equitable world for everybody to live in.
That's really powerful. And so what resources, books, blogs, podcasts, anything that you found helpful for yourself, would you want to recommend to our audience?
Oh, man. You know, honestly, Jeff, I read for sure. I read different sources. Like I read, Harvard Business Review. I think mm-hmm. there's some really great articles about management in there. But honestly, when I want to go learn something, I actually talk to people. I find mentors. I find colleagues who are running similar businesses, and I just talk to them all the time. And we have really in-depth conversations about what they're doing well, what they're not doing well. Reading's only going to get you so far. I'm somebody who likes to learn by doing,
yep,
and learn by interacting. So I really want to interact with colleagues, with mentors, understand what challenges they faced at what different times. So, you know, I'll read HBR. I'll read mm-hmm. Something like the Shopify Plus blog. That's an industry blog. You know, I'll read Internet Retailer, you know, to see what's going on in the industry. I read another blog called 2PML, which is really dedicated to direct-to-consumer brands. Mm-hmm. I'll read The Economist. I try to read that, you know, at least a few articles every week to learn more about sustainability on a higher level and circular economies. So it's a wide array of sources. You know, I would say, I heard this from another CEO, that 75% of my time is built towards running the business and making sure the business is running well. And 25% of my time is towards understanding what's going on in the world so that what's going on in the world can help influence how we fit into that world. And I really like that. And I was really drawn to that. I thought that was a nice sentiment. So, you know, I try to embody that as much as possible as well.
And in addition, again, I just want to give another little plug for Climate Neutral. You know, we'll reference them in the show notes, but it's a great organization. And thank you, you know, personally for introducing me to them as well.
Absolutely. My pleasure. They're really doing a lot of work around requirements and certifications for retailers and for businesses of any industry to measure their climate impact and to offset that impact, which mm-hmm. is what every business needs to be doing at this point.
And so before we let you go, where can people find and connect with you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn is my go-to social media. So my LinkedIn page is Anshe Bhatia, AnsheBhatia. Look forward to connecting with anybody on LinkedIn. I'm on there quite frequently. Don't really do much on Twitter or Instagram. So I'm on there, but LinkedIn is really the place to find me.
Great. And we'll link to that in the show notes as well. Anshe, thank you so much for being here. And most importantly, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate you putting this together. And, you know, I bid you adieu. Thank you.
I had a great conversation with Anshe. It's such a powerful stance to set a climate change goal for an e-commerce agency, a great example of how everyone can do their part.
If you want to reach out to us directly about this story or inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short.